Welcome to Eco Radio KC, right here on 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. On today's program, Richard Mabian talks with the folks from Wildwood. Also, some students who returned from the, help me out, Richard.
Power Shift
Conference. First, we're going to play a couple of messages for you, and then we'll have Season in to do the news.
This retired federal employee, Bill Claw, is encouraging all my federal employee friends to please consider supporting KKFI during this year's combined federal campaign. That's CFC code 21994. Just a few dollars a week on payroll deductions won't mean much to you, but it'll mean big bucks to us at KKFI. So please consider supporting KKFI. That's agency code 21994.
Judy Juanita discusses Virgin Soul, her thinly disguised novel about her life as a Black Panther, on Book Waves, Wednesday at noon.
Did you know that you can donate that unwanted car, boat, truck, or motorcycle to KKFI and get a tax deduction for your donation? Find out more by calling 866-628-2277.
Welcome to Eco Radio KC. On today's show, we'll chat with students from the University of Kansas who attended the Power Shift Conference for Environmental Justice. Later, we'll chat about the Wildwood Education Center in Lacine, which provides experiential outdoor education to hundreds of urban youth each year. But first, these headlines. The Federal Aviation Administration, or FAA, has reported that there were more than 10,000 collisions between birds and aircraft in 2011. In an effort to protect airfield environments from bird strike hazards, reports the Aiken Standard, the University of Georgia's Savannah River Ecology Laboratory began a project this summer to produce an acoustic hailing device which will disperse birds from unwanted locations. Having begun with marking 100 vultures in the Savannah River system and attaching 20 of them with satellite transmitters allowing scientists to study their movements, scientists are hoping to mark at least 100 more birds next spring, including vultures, ducks, gulls, and blackbirds. Next summer, they will bait the birds to one or more sites and test their device, which is called the HS-18 Hyperspike. Larry Bryan, a worker at the ecology lab, said that the sound treatments will likely consist of up to 10 minutes of high-level sound, followed by 2 minutes of silence, with the pattern repeating for up to an hour. Scientists will look at how the birds respond to the sound, noting whether they leave altogether or whether they eventually return, and if so, how much time elapses before the birds return to the site. The data received from the study will be used to assist the FAA in determining the utility of the devices. It will then assist airport managers with reducing risks of bird collisions with aircraft. The device's development is a cooperative project with USDA Wildlife Services with FAA backing. Many of the studies are being conducted at the Savannah River system, but there are also study components at Bushfield in Augusta, Georgia, and at the Three Rivers Landfill in South Carolina. Although U.S. citizens have direct input on things like the Keystone XL pipeline's route, since it would cross into the U.S. from its origin in Canada, we're perhaps not quite so fortunate regarding a proposed nuclear dump site just across the Canadian border from Michigan. The Detroit Free Press reported Sunday that a three-person joint review panel appointed by the Canadian government will conclude a public comment period on Canadian utility giant Ontario Power Generation's plan for a deep geologic repository near its Bruce nuclear facility near Kincardine, Ontario, a shoreline community of about 11,000 residents, which is about 115 miles northeast of Port Huron, Michigan. For the 24 million U.S. residents who get drinking water from the Great Lakes and those making their living from Michigan's $2.4 billion fishing industry or $13 billion tourism industry, it's a vital policy decision over which their elected representatives have no control. The facility would be more than 2,200 feet underground in a layer of limestone with a 660-foot layer of shale above. There, containers of radioactive waste from Ontario's 20 nuclear reactors would be stored in created corridors. Most of the disposed items would be low-level waste, such as mops, rags, floor sweepings, and clothing, items that can be safely handled by workers without any special radiation protection, according to the utility's proposal. But the underground facility would also take intermediate-level waste, things like filters, resins, things that are closer to the nuclear core, according to utility spokesman Neil Kelly, who said that such items are, quote, much more radioactive and need to be handled with a lot more care, unquote. Although Kincardine residents are reportedly among those most supportive of the repository plan, up to 500 jobs could be created during the 5 to 7 year construction period, and up to 40 permanent jobs would be created to operate the repository, not all Canadian residents are happy about it. Beverly Fernandez, a resident of Saugeen Shores, Ontario, which is about 20 miles from Kincardine, helped form the nonprofit organization Stop the Great Lakes Nuclear Dump after learning the project was years into development before she'd ever heard about it, despite living next door. The group has gathered more than 38,000 online petition signatures from both sides of the border calling for the rejection of the project. The proposal also caught some Michigan lawmakers off guard. State Senator Hunyoung Hopgood said that the public awareness of what the utility proposes drops off dramatically outside the host communities around the Bruce nuclear plant. Although information was provided to the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality in 2005, no public forums or comment opportunities were offered in Michigan on the repository proposal, according to outreach records provided by the utility. Senator Hopgood and State Representative Sarah Roberts testified earlier this month at the Joint Review Panel hearings. Senator Hopgood's testimony included letters of concern from a host of Michigan commercial, sportsmen, and environmental groups, including the Michigan United Conservation Clubs and the Michigan Boating Industries Association. Senator Hopgood commented, quote, "All of the attributes of the Great Lakes, the drinking water for tens of millions of people, our lives and livelihoods literally depend on it. It's a unique natural resource on the globe. Michigan is literally defined by it. The thought of burying nuclear waste next to a Great Lake seems beyond comprehension," unquote. Although Mark Jensen, a geologist contracted by the utility to evaluate the suitability of the proposed site, says that the shale and limestone sediments are stable and that the facility is being designed to withstand the possibility of future ice ages, the return of glaciers to the region, and an earthquake of up to magnitude 7.5, other experts in the field are concerned. John Cantlin, a former vice president of research and dean of the graduate school at Michigan State University, who also served on the U.S. Nuclear Waste Technical Review Board for nearly 8 years, including 4 years as the board's chairman, is one such. Though he has not reviewed the scientific specifics of the Canadian Utilities project, when told the facility would be built in a layer of limestone, Cantlin said he would be a lot happier if it were granite, a denser rock through which water is less likely to flow. But Cantlin said that an even bigger worry for those concerned about the Great Lakes should be continued storage of high-level radioactive spent nuclear fuel at operating and decommissioned nuclear plants throughout the region. 15 sites in 5 U.S. states and Ontario store spent nuclear fuel in wet pools or dry casks within 1 mile of a Great Lake, which Cantlin said is, quote, far, far more dangerous and susceptible to terrorist activity, unquote. While designed to withstand almost any weather contingency or accident scenario, nature can still surprise, Cantlin noted, citing the 2011 nuclear disaster in Japan, where a, quote, very well-engineered, unquote, Fukushima nuclear plant designed to withstand a major earthquake and tsunami was still overwhelmed by an even worse scenario than was foreseen. Michigan residents hoping to weigh in on the repository are nearly out of options. Hopgood suggested contacting members of Congress. Michigan's U.S. Senators, Democrats Carl Levin and Debbie Stabenow, last week sent a letter to U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, urging his involvement in helping the Canadian government reconsider the location of the repository and asking that Mr. Kerry engage the International Joint Commission, a binational organization that guides the U.S. and Canada in resolution of boundary water issues. In an era when people are reportedly moving closer to city centers for a better connection to their communities, as well as more convenient and environmentally friendly transportation options, one of the most environmentally friendly modes of travel in the U.S. is in trouble, again. The Kansas City Star reported today that Amtrak is in danger of losing some of its long-distance routes because states are unwilling or unable to take over more of the federal government's burden of funding for the passenger train lines. States are increasingly taking on infrastructure costs they once counted on Washington to cover, whether it's funding for highway construction or port improvements. They might not have much more room in their budgets. States have shown that they are willing to pay for popular Amtrak corridors within their borders, but it's less than certain that they could assume responsibility for more than a dozen cross-country trains that date to the 1970 creation of Amtrak by Congress. Three times as many passengers boarded short-distance trains in the most recent fiscal year as they did longer routes, but the longer routes actually cost more to operate. Over its 40-plus year existence, Amtrak has received more than $40 billion, and the long-distance trains lost a combined $600 million in 2012, despite transporting a record-setting number of passengers that year. California Republican Representative Jeff Denham, chairman of the House Railroad Subcommittee, said, quote, "We simply cannot afford to continue these levels of subsidized losses year after year," unquote. As some cities and states have discovered, once you lose a train, it's even more expensive to get it back. Amtrak said in a 2009 report that it would cost as much as $500 million to reestablish service on a Denver to Portland, Oregon route through Boise, which was discontinued 16 years ago. That same year, Amtrak estimated the cost to rebuild service from New Orleans to Jacksonville, Florida, which was stopped after Hurricane Katrina's visit to the Gulf Coast, to be $32 to $96 million. Late last year, after $114 million in state-funded track and infrastructure improvements, Norfolk, Virginia restored its missing Amtrak link after a 35-year hiatus. The Southwest Chief, which covers 2,265 miles from Chicago to Los Angeles, travels an historic route across western Kansas that needs millions of dollars in repairs. BNSF Railway, one of North America's largest freight rail companies, owns the line but uses it sparingly. If Kansas, Colorado, and New Mexico can't come up with roughly $100 million in the next few years, the train will have to find another track. One alternate route would bring the train through Wichita and Amarillo, Texas, but that route, also owned by BNSF, has become a primary freight artery between the ports in Southern California and the Midwest. Amtrak would compete for increasingly limited space. If its host states don't step in to save the Southwest Chief route, the train's route from Chicago would dead-end at Union Station in Kansas City. Danny Rotert, a spokesman for Kansas City Mayor Sly James, told the Star that, quote, anything that would diminish a high-profile train like the Chief would be a concern for us. We're trying to get more rail and not less, unquote. Hopefully, a balance can be created between state and federal purse holders so that this economical, environmentally responsible mode of travel can be maintained. For more information on any of our stories, find Eco Radio KC on Facebook and Twitter, where we post links to some of our sources. While you're visiting, we invite you to like and follow us. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everyone. Good evening. This is Richard Mabian. And Susan, as always, you did a fantastic job. I mean, I understand we sometimes find ourselves under stress getting started and stuff, but we always work it out, and that's what's good for you. I've got a lot to cover tonight. I mean, I got two different sets of people here, and both of them, I think, have something that we need to hear. The first one here being Wildwood, and I switched the order around. I'm going to have Wildwood go first. So instead of me giving you my normal moments of wit, I'll say, well, I will have to talk about something. That a listening session is going on out there at EPA on November the 4th. It's starting to heat up around here, folks. You know, if you haven't seen it, I'm not for sure if we have it on our website or not. Mike, if we don't, I want you to get that on our website so people can go look at it, find out what's going on. November the 4th, there's going to be a public listening session out at the EPA office in Lenexa. People are coming in from Iowa, Nebraska, Missouri, and Kansas, coming all the way from St. Louis, the deepest end of these both states, and they're going to be expressing their concerns about the Clean Air Act. Why it's necessary, why we need it, and explaining to EPA what it is doing for the work that we're all involved in, especially the Sierra Club. But today I just saw where a counter group in Johnson County is making an effort to be there so they can, they say, tell the real reason why they should prevent EPA from being able to use those regulations. So here we go, folks, right here in our own backyard. They're calling in just another one of Obama's payday things. So what I was really excited about, and I still am, is looking like it's now starting to grow with some opposition to it. So if you haven't heard about it yet, as I said, see if you can find something about it by looking on the Internet. And if not, we'll try to see if we can't get something on our website. Now, that's all I'm going to have time to talk about on any issue that's outside of the show tonight. But once before, a couple of times before, I think now, we had shows that dealt with Wildwood. And I think the last time we was on here, we said that we would come back again and talk basically about Wildwood itself. The last time we were here, we talked about the biomimicry program that they had a guy in town from Berkeley in that area that was talking about it out there. So we had them come in and talk about that. But this time we're going to talk about Wildwood, the STEM education summer camp. I like to refer to it. STEM meaning science, technology, engineering, and math. And it's a program that's designed for children. And instead of me sitting here trying to tell you what I know about it, I'm going to introduce our guest to you. Robin, would you introduce yourself?
Thank you, Richard. I'm Robin Cooper Cornejo. I'm the executive director of Wildwood Outdoor Education Center.
Okay. And tell us what Wildwood is about, just in a nutshell here.
We offer outdoor education, environmental education, experiential learning and leadership to youth and to adults from the metro area.
Okay, and I'm going to come back to that. I didn't know you had adults out there. It would scare me on that. You'll have me out there. Okay, we are familiar with it. We had some young people go out there with us this past summer from Wyandotte County. And I know for a fact it was a tremendous experience. What is it that we could, if I had children and I was sitting at home listening to the radio right now, and I hear you talking about a camp, something that the kids can do, what times of year is the camp that we're talking about available for the youth in the urban areas?
Well, we offer programming primarily from the first part of April through the end of October. And sometimes we open up camp usually the middle of March and close at the middle of November. So we offer outdoor school during those times. So schools come with whatever grade level they bring. So generally it's fourth through sixth grade.
Okay.
And we have a couple of schools that are multi-age schools. So that's what goes on in the spring and in the fall. We have the Adventure Challenge course, which is a program that is adventure education. It's elements in the woods that are designed for team building and problem solving for youth groups of youth, usually 10 to 14.
Okay.
Kiddos per group. We have summer camp, and I think that's primarily what you were mentioning, Richard, in that that's our mission to serve the youth from Kansas City.
Okay.
And so we have Summer Adventure, which is youth ages 8 through 15, and it is a Monday through Friday program. We'll have five sessions of that this summer, and that's traditionally what we have.
Now, is that what we went to? Was that one of the sessions that we were involved in?
You did come. We did have some kiddos to Summer Adventure and Find Yourself Leadership Camp.
Okay. Now, we're gonna start getting these terms now, because when you was just talking, I'm going, wow, I've been there. I've had kids there, and I've been there. I've even spoke there. but still there's a lot about Wildwood that I really don't understand. So let's take one group first, and then I'm going to start finding out what these other groups are about.
Okay, great.
Let's go with the summer camp, the one that our kids came with. And now to bring everybody up to date, I met a guy who's on their board of directors, and he was asking if we could get together and provide something for the children in Wyandotte County, and that's what got us started. Basically, we sent the kids there for a week. Explain that program, how that works.
Well, SuburbVenture is traditional camp, and it is...
What's that name you call it? What'd you call it?
Summer Adventure.
Summer Adventure, okay.
Ages 8 through 15.
Okay.
Co-ed. And kids come and they do many of the activities that you would envision in traditional camp. So, you know, swimming, we have canoeing, fishing. We do have a low and a high ropes course. So the low ropes course is, as I mentioned before, the emphasis is problem solving and team building.
Okay.
The high ropes course is more of a peak experience, so individual challenge with the group encouraging their success. And so it is a, over residential overnight camp. So kiddos do outdoor ed activities like cookouts and things like that, I think, that you think of as being traditional camp activities. They do the ropes course, and we do swimming. We do swimming lessons. So just kind of a culmination of, depending on the number of kids we have three cabins for girls, three for boys. So we can sleep about 155.
Okay. On each session, you can have about 155 kids.
Well, we have counselors in the cabins.
Okay.
And so, of course, that includes the counselors. So, really, we're very, very full with 100 to 110 kids.
Okay. So our kids were picked up on a Monday morning, came to the camp, and they stay there until Friday. That's 5 days. I mean, I came down on Wednesday just so I could poke my nose in to see what was going on. And the kids seemed like, by the time I got there on Wednesday, they were experienced campers. I mean, these are kids who probably had never been out of the neighborhood. And by Wednesday, they were experienced campers. I got there. They were fishing. They were out there in the canoe. I think you got some paddle boats. And the paddle boats where you use your feet with the little boats, right? You got some of those, or was it canoes?
Canoes.
They were in, and of course I got to see the high rope part, but I was just so impressed with how quick a transition it was for them to go from being inner city, living in our kind of circumstances, kids who in many cases don't even get an opportunity to go anywhere during the summer, to all of a sudden find themselves thrust into that type of environment, and they were loving it. One of the questions I wanted to ask you now, of course, we sent a group, but you don't have to be a group, do you? You can you come as an individual if you just want to send your kids?
Yes, you can. We have it's open enrollment, and then we do recruit from schools and community centers, and
okay.
So the kiddos you were talking about, when we work out a process for them to enroll and kind of customize their applications and work out transportation.
Right.
So we will offer transportation to two sessions again this summer, and then we will have some where the parents will bring them. And so they'll arrive on Monday and Friday, just like the kids who come on the bus, but their parents will bring them.
I want to mention that Robin's husband is Jose. He's also there. And he was the one who came in and was with me on the last presentation with the biomimicry. And I know that the caliber of youngsters, I mean, the things that the youngsters would be doing. Now, one of the reasons he wanted me to have this show in November. And we don't talk about prices here, so we don't promote people to spend money or anything like that, or to meet me there, or none of that kind of stuff. But we want to the listeners to hear about this going into the holiday season, because you know you're looking, grandparents, you're out there looking for gifts for your kids for Christmas around that time, and I know computers are the number one items. We just had in fact our grandbaby had a birthday today, and now kids send wish lists. I mean, you know, it's so different than it used to be, and at the top of that list was one of them electronic things, you know. So I understand that's out there. We're not going to get away from it. But at the same time, I just wanted to throw that in there. Keep in mind what we're talking about, because this could be a wonderful gift to give to a child, the kids, a family, a group, or whatever. Just be aware of that. Now, you mentioned a couple of things, and we don't have a whole lot of time, so I want to make sure that I get these things in here. You mentioned something about a school. Schools come out, so you have schools that will work with you and bring a whole class out. Is that right?
Yes. In outdoor school, they'll come for 2, 3, 4, or 5 days and stay residentially.
Okay.
And in those instances, the teachers and principals and the school staff stay in the cabins with the campers. In the summer, of course, we have a full staff who does that. And then, of course, the Adventure Challenge course has its own booking. So it's a 9-to-2 program, and the youth just come for the day and
okay.
participate, and the teachers design the groups because they want those relationships to be established with their classmates.
Robin, it's nowhere in the world. We're fucking running out of time on this. There's nowhere in the world I'd be able to sit here and talk to people and you about this. I'd almost need 2 shows to really cover the extent of what y'all have. I want you to give people your contact information. And I think, again, we'll put it on the website, let it be there for a period of time, so people who are listening, if in fact you would want to find out more about it, you can contact folks. So what does a person have to do if they want to find out more about this?
You can contact me at robin@wildwoodctr.org, and Robin is like the bird, R-O-B-I-N, @wildwoodctr.org.
Okay. Is there a number or something they can call?
Yes, 913-757-4500.
And this is located in Lacine, Kansas.
Lacine, Kansas. We're an hour south of here, about 60 miles, and right off of 69 Highway, so on 399th Street.
399. Y'all heard that. I went out there, and I couldn't believe how much rush hour traffic I was in and how far out of the city I was in that traffic. I was going, God, man, people live a long way out here in Kansas. Robin, like I said, I really appreciate you coming in. I love the place down there, and I know you all do too. And let's hope that by you being here talking, that it inspires someone to maybe want to look into it more and see about getting some kids out there. And I'll tell you what, I'll always give y'all a little shout out as we continue to move into the camping season, to make people sure that people are aware of it. In fact, we can maybe give you a call and do something on the phone or something, okay?
Yes.
All right, gang. Thank you. We're going to take a break here right quick and make a switch over with our folks, and we'll be right back.
Celebrate Halloween a day early with KKFI. First, Mary Shelley's Frankenstein is reimagined on From Ark to Microchip, Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. And then later that night, Bram Stoker's Dracula Rises from the Dead on L.A. Theater Works, Wednesday at 7 p.m. here on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
I'm Lisa Loeb, and on the next Kidlit, what's the simplest way to fend off a vampire? And are you wearing herring scales on your lips? Creepy, wacky, and true. Nonfiction books for kids of all ages. It's all on Kidlit.
And that's only part of the Halloween fun on this week's Thursday night special. Be sure to gather the kids around the radio at 7 o'clock on Halloween night.
All righty, I'm back. Boy, if y'all just knew what we just went through to make this switch over, but we got it done. I'm in here with some young people, and they were slower than I was. I don't know about y'all. you know this in, what's been now, what, a couple of weekends ago? What was it? What was the date?
3 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks
ago. The power shift.
We're going to start with that power shift, and we're adjusting as we talk, y'all. So if you hear things moving around, you realize we're doing that. power shift, and I know what I'm gonna let you all do. First thing I'm gonna do, I'm gonna introduce you. I got four people sitting in here with me, so we're gonna go right through it real quick. We'll start with Zach. Zach was here about two or three weeks ago and talked about this and the whole bit. He's our legislative guy for the Sierra Club. So start with Zach and we'll go around the room.
Sure, yeah. Zach Pastora, proud environmental lobbyist for the Kansas Sierra Club. Great to be back.
All right.
Hi, I'm Marley Schuld and I go to the University of Kansas.
Good Marley. Okay.
Hi, my name is Barbara Wolfen. I'm from Haskell Indian Nations University.
All right.
My name is Cecily Osborne, and I'm also from Haskell University.
Well, it's really nice to meet all of you, Marley. I've seen your name and stuff floating around, so it's nice to meet you. All right, here we go. PowerShift. Who wants to tell folks what PowerShift was?
Sure. Well, it was an exciting, fast-paced trip, but it was a three-day conference out in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and there was about 6,000-plus youths from all over the country coming together to talk about resource extraction, injustice that was going on in their on the front-line communities, as they call them, and all sorts of environmental issues that we need to get pumped up about and take on as our generation.
Okay, now, all you three students, you are from where? Go to school.
Well, I go to the University of Kansas.
We go to Haskell.
And you two are Haskell. Okay, so we got Lawrence people up in here. We got KU and two students from Haskell. You got to Pittsburgh how?
We drove out to Pittsburgh. It was about a 13 to 15 hour drive.
Okay.
And so it took us a while.
When you say we,
how? Sleepless nights. We took. I had three other people in my car.
Okay.
You guys took buses, right?
We took two vans. One was 11 passenger.
Okay, were y'all caravanning or were you going at different times?
We went different time than the KU students.
Okay, so y'all went on your own. Yeah, different time.
We're talking about leaving at 4 o'clock in the morning for the KU folks and getting there about 3 o'clock in the a.m. When they left.
So y'all drove straight through?
Yes.
Okay, I mean, you know, that's a nice little trip. That's a nice little state. I went to Buffalo, so I know how far it is. I had to stop in Cleveland, I believe it was. So did y'all go through there on the way to Pittsburgh?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Power shift. Barbara?
Yes.
Tell me about PowerShift. What did you think about PowerShift?
I thought PowerShift was pretty interesting. The main thing that I had noticed that was indigenous peoples were underrepresented. So this was a good chance for us to be on a national level to speak our peace of mind and have our voices being heard.
Oh, yeah.
But also, you know, I also learned as well is that this isn't a social issue, it's a human rights issue. Everybody has a right to clean air and everybody has a right to clean water.
Okay.
Regardless of race or gender.
Okay.
Or age.
Say your name again.
My name is Cecily.
Cecily. Mm-hmm. Before you went, had you been involved in any environmental issues?
Not at all.
Oh, so this was brand new for you?
It is. I'm an environmental science major, but
okay.
I had,
had
no
not
idea
been
about
anything. So how do you feel now?
I feel very opposed to coal mining and fracking.
Okay.
I learned a lot, and I came back with a whole new attitude.
Okay.
It was very educational.
You know, I can't get past 6,000 young people in one place for one particular reason, the environmental issue. I'll tell you my story on it. Did you meet the people from Green for All? Did you meet them while you were there? I think you said you...
Yeah, we met Julian from Green for All.
Right. Mm-hmm. I'm an academy member with Green for All, and I was with them when they had a power shift back during I think it was the Obama's run for presidency. And that was the first time where I didn't get an invitation to go anyplace. And I couldn't understand why all my comrades were getting invitations to go, and nobody wasn't saying anything to the elder statesman. I was the oldest person in the group. In fact, there was no one else around my age except me. And now, after they got there, I understood. So this time around, I was more understanding of what was supposed to go on. And so when Lindsay got in touch with me, I was like, rah, 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 100% behind it, because I know what this is about. I know what this is about. And I know it's the beginning of an effort to involve you all in this country's in the pulse of this country. You know, I have an appointment tomorrow for those of you out there listening with the mayor from Kansas City, Kansas. And one of the comments that I wanted to make with him was that, Obama is our environmental president. And you really don't get that understanding until you experience what you all just experienced. And you start realizing, while we're here in this part of the country, yeah, you may or may not hear people talk about things. And like Mikey attended a function this weekend, and he got there, and I think he was like the main character, and he went up there to report on it. You know, that's kind of what happens in our part of the world. But then when you get out there and you start meeting other people and you're seeing them and stuff, so how was that? How was that experience? Either one of you, you can just speak up.
Well, I know for me, in school I had learned about all these issues that we're facing in our generation and we'll have to tackle as we move on throughout our lives and for future generations. And for me, it was very disheartening to hear these things and no one is telling me a solution. So I chose to go to PowerShift because I wanted to be in a community of youth that are working towards these changes and that can empower each of us to go back into our own communities with strong hearts and just ready to make a change.
Okay. All right. Now.
Oh, it's such a high level of energy, you know, that caring people with deep hearts coming forward from all over, you know, California, Maryland, Kansas, you know. It was definitely just that solidarity with everybody else across the country was pretty inspiring and encouraging that, yeah, there's people around us that care about this too, so let's take it on.
Well, I promised that I wasn't going to get into the details too much because we're going to all get together. In fact, we'll talk about that a little bit when we get off the air so that we can really start talking the seriousness about what you experienced, kind of where we want to go from here and the whole bit. I'm looking forward to having that discussion with you. So this was to talk about the experience itself. Okay. All right. Come on now. I mean, I'm a member of the Easy Rider hippie generation. Okay. So I want to know about how it was. I want to hear some interesting experiences. I mean, I don't care if it was waiting in line to get in the bathroom. I wonder where you was going to eat your next meal. How was it? That's a lot of people. You know, that's a lot of people that you have to be able to blend in with. So tell me about it. We want to hear about it. We want some memories out of you now.
Well, speaking of bathroom lines, I was outside of the bathroom, and a woman took out a Native American flute and played a song for me in the middle of power shift.
Oh, wow.
And it was really beautiful, but it was very unexpected.
Yeah, did you develop some, what you would consider to be maybe some lasting relationships in other places, at least know about people? Did you do that?
Yeah, I think the whole part was networking.
Okay.
So I know I checked out a lot of emails and a lot of names to network with some people. So that was interesting and it was fun.
Was it?
Yeah. To know that their stories and what they've been through is similar to what others are going through. You know.
Your comment just helped me. I want you to know that when you said you took down a lot of emails, because I'm getting ready to go to one of the national events. I'm going to a National Alliance of Black School Educators. Yeah, I'm like you as far as the lack of people of color being involved in those kind of affairs. So I'm going up to work on a whole organization to tell them why we need them. We need them to start getting involved in these issues. I mean, as a practitioner, I need them to, from the education standpoint, to start encouraging their students to get involved. That has to come from them. I mean, we can only do so much from our perspective. And the one thing I was thinking about today was business cards. I was going, man, this is going to be 6,000 people at this one, too, you know. And I'm going, man, I'd have to have a whole box of cards. So your youthful generation has made me realize I could just use something to get the, you know, we don't think like that in my era. We still think in terms of handing out cards.
So when you registered, they gave us some business cards, you know, hand out. Yeah. You saw people, they were wheeling and dealing. Handing those things out.
Yeah.
So, gender-wise, how would you figure? How was it? You already said as far as people of color, there was definitely a lack of people of color. That's true. Okay. So, gender-wise, how was it? Male, female? What did you see?
I would say that was pretty even.
Was it?
Yeah. I didn't really notice it, so.
Okay, so it must have been. Yeah, all right, that's a good thing. That's a good thing. Your speakers, were they young, old?
They ranged. There were some artists, some hip-hop artists. One was 8 and one was 10.
Oh, that's young.
They were talking about, was it conscious rap?
Okay.
So when they would rap, they would talk about taking on the government and taking them to court. And they're based out of Colorado. And then there was another local artist. I think he was in his...
Okay.
So it ranged from young to very... You know.
Since you're not speaking up, I'm going to have to direct the question directly towards you. So that way you can get up here on this front street too.
All right.
So if you had to recommend Power Shift, because this was Power Shift. Was this Power Shift 2?
I think they've been doing it since 2007.
2007, okay. Mm-hmm. So if you had to recommend students from Haskell to participate in a Power Shift at the end of the month, what would you say? Speak right into that mic there.
I definitely do some sort of environmental outreach, like presentation, just try to get them involved, tell them the interesting points of Power Shift. There are so many things to cover, so many interesting things, you know. Environmental issues, that's a big deal in Indian country.
Well, y'all are being kind of conservative. Okay, if I was over in the hood trying to encourage some of my homies to attend this Power Shift, yes, environmental concerns would be an issue, but I'd be going, man, the people, I mean, it was... You know, and I haven't heard that from y'all yet. Now, I'm letting you slide a little bit. I know you probably got your mamas and your daddies out there talking about you can't talk too much about what went on. But I just know that Zach, when I was really excited about him going, Zach's a pretty sharp guy, and he really understands this environmental game we're dealing with. He understands it from a policy side, but I was really excited for him to go because then whenever I get with him by myself, I'm gonna get some of them stories.
Oh man, I can't tell you how much fun it was. I mean, besides being inspired and learn about all sorts of issues from fracking to the Keystone Pipeline, we really got down at the concerts too. Part of additional bonding of just being with each other, on the issues. We're with each other and having fun too.
The guy Julian that you talked about that was in Kansas City he brought Drake to town.
Wow.
He brought Drake to town over at UMKC. And so we were all involved in we had a booth and we was out dealing with people and talking about it and talking about the environment and the whole bit. And so that night when Drake was performing, Drake was performing, and I looked around for Julia. Boy, he was hop, skipping, and jumping and dancing all over the place. He was just really having a good time. He loves that environment,
Oh, yeah. And I actually, one thing about Julian is he led our march afterwards.
Okay.
We had a rally of protests against PNC Bank out of Pittsburgh, and they're the largest financier of coal.
Okay.
That dirty coal energy they're using up in there in the Appalachian. So we had about thousands, students left over from the conference that led this march. And I hadn't been on a march of that size.
I was going to say,
that's
some interesting news. Yeah. Yeah. I could have told me
people
that.
Get arrested, too.
Did they get arrested? Uh-oh. You didn't tell me that.
It was for a good cause. They were in downtown Pittsburgh.
That is really cool. I mean, to be in a situation like that. And you mentioned something that I want to get your opinion of because I know we don't talk that much about it around here. You talked about mountaintop removal. Tell me about that. Come on, tell me, what did you think when you heard people talking about it? Because that's not something that we talk about. And so when you hear people painting that picture for you, it does something. So what'd you hear out of any of you?
I saw a documentary over it, and I got to see what it looks like. It's horrible. It's bad. I'm completely against it.
Right.
And it's only for so much of a resource, just pounds of a resource. You're blowing off whole mountains.
Right.
For this little bit of resource.
So nobody, now people don't understand that, and I'm sure you had people there that was talking about it. That's a different kind of environmentalist. Okay, I mean, you know, coal mine people is a different kind of environmentalist, period. And even because they got the black lung and the ones out of Kentucky and those kind of places, their story resonates a lot deeper. You know, we're talking fracking, we're talking stuff that is can and cannot happen. Okay, so that's what we're talking about. I mean, coal fired plants with the coal and that kind of stuff. But when you start talking about those being in those coal mines, and if you've ever been a place and see some of the people who are suffering the consequences of being in those coal mines, it brings this environmental picture home to you real fast. You know, you start realizing this is really more serious than we're really thinking, you know. And that's what's good about being able to make those trips, because you start meeting those people, okay? And they are truly committed to what's happening in those areas, and that's so it's good. So where do you now? I'm not going to ask you where we're going from here. I promised I wouldn't do that. I want to save that to when we all together with some of the other environmentalists or some of the other Sierra Club people, that you won't find yourself in a position that you're continuously repeating it over and over and over. Okay, so what do you want? What do you feel we should be conveying to people that we meet based on what you have experienced? I'll let each one of you answer that.
Well, I know for me, I care most about the social problems that we as Americans face, especially in inner cities.
When you say social problem, what do you mean?
Oh, man, I
can't even just
wealth disparity, okay, segregation, effects of the effects those have on communities in general.
All right.
Which then leads into so many other
different
problems. But eco-justice and environmental change will have an impact on the social problems that people face. And I don't think a lot of people realize how connected these things are.
Right.
So for me, it was important to see these environmental issues from the social justice standpoint and the eco-justice standpoint, and see how we can change them in communities.
We got about 5 minutes, pretty close to that, and I just wanted to open the line up late. I'm sorry I didn't get that out to y'all, but if there's someone out there that's got a dying something they need to say, give us a call, 816-931-5534. 816-931-5534. All right. Same question.
This is ultimately going to affect everybody, not just the people around these issues, just the people concerned about these issues. This is affecting everybody, whether we like it or not. This needs to be known. People don't know enough about this stuff, and if something doesn't change, it's going to be, and there's going to be a negative impact for all of us. Eventually.
Okay.
Oh,
don't be going to sleep on me.
Sorry. I agree with Cecily, you know, that everybody needs to get on board. I know that Indigenous peoples have known this for a long time. We have been directly impacted for a very long time, whether it's from dirty water to, environmental damages.
Okay. Is that someone? All right, look at that. We got a caller. Caller, you're on the line. Sorry it took me so long to give out that number, but first of all, give me your first name and the part of the city you're calling from, please.
Well, my name is Tyra Hobbs, and I'm calling from Noble, Oklahoma.
Reach. Go right ahead. What's your question there, Tyra?
You know, I'm real encouraged that these kids went and got involved in all this. When they say they want to inspire the communities and everything is really webbed, you know, what are some of the things they can take back to Lawrence and share with their peers to get things hopping in their own areas?
It's a good question, and thank you for calling in. You've made my day, always from Oklahoma. I went to school in Enid, Oklahoma, by the way, so rah-rah, Oklahoma. All right, which one of you want to give me an answer on that? That was a good question. I'm going to talk to you offline now. Thank you.
I think, like we were saying, a good way to let everybody know is just how much fun we had there and, tie in all the cool stuff we learned with that. You know, not everyone's going to listen to, I went to this panel and it was really fun because we talked about this. People are going to want to know about the, city life, stuff like that. What you did, firstly, that's fun, plus what you learned.
Okay.
And for me, coming from such a big university as KU is, we have so much power at our disposal that we sometimes don't recognize that we have. We can make a difference for our campus and set precedents for the entire Midwest and country and their universities as well. And we just have to join forces and spread the awareness to the students on campus and make them want to make this difference, want to make this change. It's not just recycling anymore. Mm-hmm. There's so many other things you can do.
So, Zach, I'm going to let you finish up, but I'm going to jump in here. Because I just want you all to know that I feel like sitting here listening to you, that you got it. That you got it. And you got it in a way that very few people do. But your comments that you made here are so close to what my experience was. And my friend down in Oklahoma, I'm going to add this in there because I want you to hear it also. You know, I agree. And from a Native American perspective, I realized that the environmental movement is going to affect everybody. And when I went to my first two environmental conferences and saw that there was a lack of people of color there, I realized that if I didn't do something, that nothing was going to be done. And that's the attitude I operate with right now. This radio show, the things that I'm doing, all of it has to do with knowing that it has to be done. Somebody has to do it. And I'm really glad to hear you talking about the different kind of justices that you are. Zach, you got a minute.
Yeah, that's what I wanted the take-home message to be, is we just got to take it on ourselves. We can't wait for other people to do it. We have to take it in our hands.
Okay, well, we had more time. Yeah, he tells me I had 2 minutes, so I want to we going to cut it here in a second. So thank you for coming. Appreciate all of you being here. It's been fun. I was looking forward to having this conversation. And maybe one day we'll get you back here again, especially after we've had our little meeting and talked about where we're going. I want you all to come back, and we're going to lay out a list of A, B, C, D of what we come up with that we're going from here. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Society of St. Andrew, a local nonprofit providing fresh local food to the area's needy by cooperating with local growers who have excess produce, will be gleaning sweet potatoes in Linwood, Kansas tomorrow from 1 to 4 p.m. A highly nutritious and tasty veggie, sweet potatoes are in great demand by food pantries. Last Saturday, 10 people harvested 3,000 pounds of sweet potatoes in only 2 hours. Tomorrow, SOSA needs 20 folks to help harvest the remaining 6,000 pounds. To volunteer to help glean and or transport the produce, contact Karen Page at gleankc@endhunger.org. On Wednesday from 9 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., Johnson County Community College will host the Epicenter Conference, sponsored by the Center for Sustainability. Epicenter is a platform for students to learn about sustainability, share resources, and connect individual projects being led by students in schools. Students from any academic discipline, experience level, or place on the map are encouraged to attend. The conference will highlight how students in higher education have been involved in such efforts as a sustainable restaurant internship, school-wide recycling, and biodiesel initiatives. It also will give students an opportunity to hear from young professionals who are shaping and pursuing a variety of green careers, learn about sustainability, share resources, and connect with students doing similar projects at other schools. For more information, email Kim Kreiner at kcriner@jcc.edu or call 913-469-4000. 8500, extension 2883. From November 1 to December 15th, Three Link Gallery will host an exhibit dubbed Beautiful Pickle, celebrating preserved foods from heirloom recipes passed down generations to experiments by today's culinary artists, visual artists, farmers, and foodies. All works will be offered for sale, and 20% of all proceeds will be donated to the KC Food Circle. Three Link Gallery is at 106 North Bridge Street, Smithville, Missouri. For more information, email Jeff Becker at jeff@3linkstudio.com. Using materials repurposed from old garments and other green items, area kids, teens, and adults will present their self-designed creations at Project Greenway KC, a sustainable fashion show hosted by Grace Covenant Presbyterian Church. The event is a fundraiser to benefit the Sustainable Sanctuary Coalition of Kansas City. The event is Saturday from 1 to 3:30 p.m. at Grace Covenant Presbyterian Church, 11100 College Boulevard in Overland Park. The fashion show is open to the public. For more information, including how to get tickets, visit facebook.com/projectgreenwayKC. At the Greater Kansas City Gardeners of America meeting next Monday at 6 p.m., Erin Busenhart of Family Tree Garden Center will be discussing and demonstrating how to create beautiful outdoor containers for winter. The meeting will be at the Luce Park Garden Center, 5200 Pennsylvania Avenue in KCMO. It's free and open to the public. For additional information, contact Vince at 816-313-8733. Also next Monday from 7 to 8:30 p.m., Johnson County Master Gardener Miles Raymond will host a workshop teaching folks how to get started in the rewarding endeavor of keeping bees. The workshop will be at the Lackman Library, 15345 West 87th Street in Lenexa. For more information, call 913-826-4600 or visit calendar.jocolibrary.org. And finally, on next Monday, November 4, from 4 to 8 p.m., the Environmental Protection Agency will hold a public listening session at its office in Lenexa, Kansas, to solicit ideas and input from the public and stakeholders about the best Clean Air Act approaches to reducing carbon pollution from existing power plants. The Clean Air Act gives both the EPA and individual states a role in reducing air pollution from power plants that are already in operation. The law directs the EPA to establish guidelines which states use to design their own programs to reduce emissions. Before proposing guidelines, the EPA must consider how power plants with a variety of different configurations would be able to reduce carbon pollution in a cost-effective way. The feedback from these 11 public listening sessions nationwide will play an important role in helping the EPA develop smart, cost-effective guidelines that reflect the latest and best information available. The EPA will seek additional public input during the notice and comment period once it issues a proposal in June of next year. The EPA's Lenexa office is at 11201 Renner Boulevard. Check Eco Radio KC's Facebook page for a link to the EPA's page where you can register to attend the listening session. If you are unable to attend the session, the EPA is accepting input at carbonpollutioninput@epa.gov. Thanks for joining us today on Eco Radio KC. Join us next Monday at 6 p.m. sharp here on KKFI 90.1 FM, Kansas City's Community Radio. The Society of St. Andrew, a local nonprofit providing fresh local food to the area's needy by cooperating with local growers who have excess produce, will be gleaning sweet potatoes in Linwood, Kansas tomorrow from 1 to 4 p.m. A highly nutritious and tasty veggie, sweet potatoes are in great demand by food pantries. Last Saturday, 10 people harvested 3,000 pounds of sweet potatoes in only 2 hours. Tomorrow, SOSA needs 20 folks to help harvest the remaining 6,000 pounds. To volunteer to help glean and or transport the produce, contact Karen Page at gleankc@endhunger.org. On Wednesday from 9 a.m. to 2:30 p.m., Johnson County Community College will host the Epicenter Conference, sponsored by the Center for Sustainability. Epicenter is a platform for students to learn about sustainability, share resources, and connect individual projects being led by students in schools. Students from any academic discipline, experience level, or place on the map are encouraged to attend. The conference will highlight how students in higher education have been involved in such efforts as a sustainable restaurant internship, school-wide recycling, and biodiesel initiatives. It also will give students an opportunity to hear from young professionals who are shaping and pursuing a variety of green careers, learn about sustainability, share resources, and connect with students doing similar projects at other schools. For more information, email Kim Kreiner at kcriner@jccc.edu or call 913-469-8500.